I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. Novelist Salman Rushdie has achieved both critical acclaim and public celebrity. That acclaim has come for such works as Midnight's Children and The Moor's Last Sigh. The celebrity has been less welcome. Rushdie's book, The Satanic Verses, drew a fatwa, or death sentence, from Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini in 1989. The Indian-born author's new book is called The Enchantress of Florence. It moves between the royal court of India and Renaissance Italy. Salman Rushdie says the book's 16th-century setting was a pretty comfortable fit.
The kinds of stories that people loved in that period were kind of high romances. They were things with princes and ogres and magic. And I thought if I could not just write a book about the 16th century, but a book which was, if you like, the kind of book that the characters in the novel would like to read, that would be fun to do. It was like going back to the source.
And you did go back to the source. I want to hear about your research as well. But first, we should tell people that the book itself is in the 16th century, as we said. It starts with a story of a young man who stows away on a ship and travels to India to the court of this Muslim king, Akbar the Great, because the young man needs to tell him a story about a lost princess and her relationship to the king. By the way, one of the fans of your book I'm going to introduce right now, Christopher Merrill, who is our literature critic and the director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. Christopher, you and Salman Rushdie have met before, correct?
Well, I had the good luck to interview Salman some years ago, and I want to ask you now, that you include a bibliography at the end of this novel. You've done a lot of research, and I guess the question is, how do you take these historical figures and, as you say, the dry-as-dust record, and turn it into such wonderful storytelling? What's the secret?
Well, I think it's the same, really, whether it's a historical character or a contemporary one. You know, in the end, you have to get inside their skin and find out how they would have thought and felt and reacted. But these were such rich characters to begin with. You know, Akbar, this extraordinary man who ruled and in many ways unified India and was also a very tolerant, forward-looking, in a way, modern man who descended from savage, bloodthirsty warlords, but who somehow had a new idea, an idea of peace instead of tyranny. He's so interesting to begin with that actually half the work is done for you.
We should say that just to fill in some of the blanks here, it was Akbar the Great who initiated religious debates in which Muslim scholars debated points of theology with Hindus and Sikhs and Jesuits. And you portray him as really agonizing over religion and agonizing over the existence of God.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, in fact, there were contemporaries of his who believed that he had strayed too far from true religion and that he had, you know, almost blasphemed. But even in his own court, there were people who worried about his openness to other religions, his tolerance, his doubt, his skepticism. But that's exactly what makes him such a modern figure.
But how do you get into the head of somebody like that?
I don't know. I think it's quite like my head, actually. that particular head. I mean, I've never been an absolute monarch, but other than that, I think I have some of the same questions buzzing around my head as he had in his.
Such as
these questions about whether men create their gods or the other way around. And I think one of the interesting questions he asks himself is, even if God were a human creation, might it not also be the case that once you've created something that's supposed to be omnipotent, that it becomes more powerful than you and you can't uncreate it?
But, you know, he's asking such a question, and then, but he also asks at a certain point, what's going to happen after I'm gone? All these questions are raised, and then you say, but in the future it was harshness, not civilization, that would rule. Is that an accurate forecast of what's coming? Is that Salman Rushdie speaking?
No, it is. I mean, you know, what happened in the Mughal Empire is that Akbar was this extraordinarily tolerant, peace-loving man, and so were his son and grandson. But then you get Darth Vader, the sixth of the Grand Mughals, Aurangzeb, is exactly what we would now call an Islamic fanatic and was as intolerant and repressive and tyrannical as Akbar was the opposite. You know, so I wanted just to suggest that nothing is forever, that even this peaceful time can be replaced by another much darker time.
Now, when you mention also that the king is wondering what will happen after he's gone, here's a quote from the book, in fact. You say, the future would not be what he hoped for, but a dry, hostile, antagonistic place where people would survive as best they could and hate their neighbors, smash places of worship, and kill one another, once again in the renewed heat of the great quarrel he had sought to end forever, the quarrel over God. Now, as you see it, Salman Rushdie, this quarrel over God, is this at the heart of the strife in the world?
I think it's very close to the heart, yes. I mean, I think certainly we live at a moment at which the quarrel over God is right at the center. I mean, it's strange for someone of my generation because growing up in the 60s and 70s, religion had receded from the public arena. It had become largely a private matter, which is what I think it should be, really. And it was hard then to believe that religion would move back into the center of the story and become so much a bone of contention as it has. But yeah, certainly I think at that last sort of dying fall of the novel, he begins to perceive something which I guess I think about the modern day, yes.
So Salman, if, as you say, religion has become central to the story again, I'm wondering about what the novelist's role is in these debates on truth, on the nature of existence. What is the novelist's role in all of this?
Well, I think what the novel can do is ask the interesting questions, you know. And if you look at the other half of this novel, the Florentine half, you know, the princess, the Mughal princess arrives in Florence and she finds another world of, if you like, religious ferment, a world in which for a time everything is very puritanical and shut down, you know, the theaters are closed and the whorehouses are closed. But then the city revolts against that. And so that swing back and forth from the narrow mind to the more open mind, you know, is happening in this time as it is in our time. And I think one of the ways of looking at what's happening in our time is to see how it happened in another time.
Is it too much to say that for you yourself, Salman Rushdie, that there's something, a message, personal message, in the fact that she goes into exile eventually, the Enchantress?
I don't feel like an exile, really. I don't. I mean, there was a period in my life when I did. During the worst years after the fatwa, there was a period of 9 years almost when I couldn't go back to India. You know, and it's one thing to choose not to live in the country you came from. It's another thing to be told you can't go there. And those years were very difficult. Now I don't feel that. You know, now when I go to India every year and I feel very much rejoined to that. But yes, certainly I know what the feeling is of losing the place to which you feel you most intimately belong.
Well, it seems to me that you found a great home in the 16th century, both in India and in Italy. Was there a kind of sense of liberation in doing that?
Yes, there was. I tell you, one of the things that was very liberating was that this was a world in East and West where people deeply believed in magic. They thought of it as being a part of everyday life.
This is historically, you're saying this,
yeah,
this was the,
yeah,
truth.
Yeah, this was like the world view of people in the East and the West. If you fell in love with somebody, you went to get a love potion, obviously. If there was somebody that you didn't like, you tried to get a lock of their hair or a fingernail and go and get somebody to put a hex on them. That was just the natural thing to do. And to live in a world where everybody's mindset was like that, to try and write about that world was a fantastic liberation, because then you could write in a way which was full of fable and fantasy and ogres and demons, and I like that.
All right. Very nice to have you here. The book is called The Enchantress of Florence by Salman Rushdie, winner of the Booker Prize, and the author himself, who has won the Best of the Booker most recently. Congratulations, and thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Christopher Merrill, thank you.
Thank you.
Christopher Merrill directs the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. He and I spoke with novelist Salman Rushdie, and you can hear a longer version of our conversation at theworld.org. While you're there, check out Bill Mark's World Books page as well. This is PRI.